Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Bring a little sunshine indoors with the exciting new arrivals in store or online at harrycurry.com.
You remember Eddie Clark, who started the programme on Monday about being attacked outside Tara Street railway station in Dublin, and the nonchalance of the attacker as she walked away with the stolen jacket and stolen set of headphones. And Mark Rogers, a lot of you would know Mark, and Paul Kinsler. Mark and Paul are a couple, and they were out last night in Dublin. Mark, good afternoon. Hello, Mark. You're coming up to me, Mark, yes? Are you there, Mark?
I am, yeah.
Oh, yeah,
I'm
good.
I'm
hear you.
Can you hear me?
Yeah,
no, sorry.
People don't just know your voice. They know your face because you're the beauty expert on the Today Show. And then Paul is there. So what happened in Dublin last night, Mark? And I'm so sorry.
It did.
I'm so sorry. What happened?
So it was a beautiful evening, as everyone knows, yesterday in Dublin. I'd come home from work and we decided to go to our favourite local restaurant for dinner. We left our house. We were a few hundred metres from our house and three young teens on electric scooters kind of ran past us on their scooters or scooted past, and they started shouting like gay slurs at us, basically saying that we were filthy faggots and queers and, you know, really quite aggressive and quite intimidating because they're on the scooters, they're whizzing past, and they kind of went up to a traffic lights in front of us. And our usual go-to, because unfortunately it's not the first time we've been ever someone's shouted something at us in public, we initially just ignore it and you just hope it goes away. But unfortunately they rounded back and decided that we were the focus, the target, and so they started weaving in between us. They continued the slurs, they continued kind of shouting at us, and we started to basically just try and tell them to leave us alone. Now I have to say, I'm a 40-year-old man and these are teens, but it was outrageously intimidating. I was really scared. Like, one of them was, I was fairly sure, and he told me later, he was going to thump me in the head. He was absolutely going to box the head off me, as he said. And basically, our only retaliation was to ask them to leave us alone. And, you know, but they can't be saying that. They can't be calling us those names. They wouldn't leave us. So our only retaliation was, we are near a Garda station. So we said, look, if you don't leave us alone, we're going to go to the Garda station. They had no fear, Joe. I've never seen anything like this before. Nothing deterred them. Well, actually, I unfortunately have seen it before, but nothing deterred them. Mm-hmm. We set off to the Garda station, which was about a 7 to 10 minute walk from where we were. And they followed us the whole way, harassing us the whole way in broad daylight. And then when we got to the Garda station, this is the part that really panics me. I was like, at some stage, these are going to feel fear and they are going to stop. They waited circling outside the Garda station on their scooters as we were in there. They did not care. They had no concern whatsoever. It felt like they knew there would be no repercussion for them whatsoever. And I have to say, the guards were very helpful. They were very kind inside and, you know, listened to us. And the guards did go out to speak to them. But again, like, I was expecting, I don't know whether it's just me, but like, I was expecting when the guard goes out, they're going to run off. They're going to flee.
They're going to be gone.
Exactly. Yeah, but no, they held steady. They were quite rude to the guard. He basically was trying to get them to agree to apologise. We did go out to them and they did apologise. So they were laughing and sneering. And again, still just would not leave. They were still there. The guard basically came in and asked us to give the details, and we made a report with the guards that then and there. And we left kind of feeling, not knowing what was going to happen next or if there is anything that can be done, because essentially he was saying they're underage. There's not a huge amount I can do right now for this. So when we were leaving, they were still there outside. And when we were leaving, we weren't sure whether this was going to continue. Were they going to follow us further? We were afraid to go back to our home because we didn't want them to know
where we lived
so that this would like continue on. So then we actually went the opposite direction of our house and found a local restaurant that we could hide in. Like, two practically 40-year-old men hiding in a restaurant because it was terrifying. Like, it really was quite terrifying. I didn't know what was going to happen next. And thankfully, they didn't follow us. We hid for an hour or so. We got a taxi home because we were afraid of bumping into them on the way home again. And honestly, going back into our own home that we've lived in for 5 years, for the first time ever, we were looking outside our front door going, are there people here? Did they see where we are? And it just felt so sad to not feel safe in our own space that, you know, we love so dearly. So, yeah, it was a pretty terrifying situation.
But this image, Mark, and this image you have of these three, you say teenagers, the guard you say you're in, weaving in and out on their electric scooters or circling you and then going ahead, coming back. That is really intimidating.
And also,
they could get away in a hurry.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And also, the thing is that the things they were saying were just words that I just didn't even think existed anymore. That people, like, I didn't think that the youth, like, young people of this age, I just felt like we had moved so much further forward. But actually, I felt like I was back in school when I was 15 with the worst hate speech being thrown at me and the most disgusting things being said about me because of my sexuality and because I'm there with my gorgeous husband. You know, it was a really sad evening. And the thing that really got me this morning and made me kind of go, no, I actually have to say something about this is because this morning I woke up actually kind of blaming myself because we walked down the street and it would be very rare that me and my husband, because of the age that we were brought up in, we don't usually hold hands in public. Okay. It's not something that we do. I don't know whether we're conditioned. It's just not something that we do. And yesterday we were holding hands and I was upset with myself this morning because I felt like we had done something when actually I should be able to walk down my street holding hands with my husband. And it's not my fault that this happened. It's not right. And like there should be, you know, repercussions for these things. Now, we have spoken to the guards today and they have been very helpful and they have said that, you know, there is a follow up to this in that we can make a statement and we can do it by a booked appointment if we don't feel safe going to a particular station.
Great.
They can actually launch an actual investigation.
Okay. Well, your husband, Paul, is there as well. Paul, I'm so sorry this has happened to you. Paul, was there any, was it 7 o'clock in the evening, busy Dublin street? Was there anyone else that witnessed this that might have checked them?
I don't, like, thanks so much for even bringing light to this. I think it just took me so off guard because, as you said, it was 7:30, beautiful day out, and like the road we were walking on is busy. So it's not like there wasn't people on us, and there was multiple people on us. You know, you'd have some elderly, you'd have some single female. There was actually a group of girls who were walking towards us when this was actually happening. But I can't blame anybody else from not stopping because the scary thing was they were doing this in front of everyone without any sort of qualm or fear of repercussion. So you would nearly say, well, they're just going to attack that person, or they're going to attack the woman who's across the road or the elderly gentleman who is behind us. Because it was just so easy to them.
Yeah.
No fear. And just, that was the thing that really shook, I think, the two of us. Just the lack of fear of consequence. And also, like, that they were at that moment in time, they were the only people in the world. They did, you know, and it was just really scary to see that.
They followed you to a guard station on the three scooters.
And I'm not going to lie, that was the longest 10-15 minute walk of my life, because you would think that even the words of it would have deterred. I know back in, I think I would have, like 10 years ago, you know, maybe I would have completely ran away if someone said something like that. But this was just, and I did then in my brain go, we're actually after moving to a quieter street. Is something more serious going to happen? Mm-hmm. And you just hear of all these things with people having things in pockets. And I was just so hyper-vigilant of something else happening more disastrous than what just happened to us. And I know it is horrible, but, you know, you can't help but feel that way.
Yeah. The thing about it is, as well, you can't blame people for not stepping in. Like, what are you supposed to do? Even if you're walking by and you see this happening, like, what is, like, there was one particular woman who was walking behind us when this actually kicked off. And I seen her make eye contact with me. And I knew that she was sad by what was happening. I knew that she was aware of what was happening, but also she also can't put herself in that position. Mm. Like, what are you supposed to do? What can you do? And also, as people are walking by, they're seeing a snapshot of the entire exchange as we're on this walk for like the 10, 15 minutes to get to the Garda station. And, you know, I could see people seeing what was happening, but it is very hard. I myself, if I was walking past a similar like situation, I'm not sure I'd know what to do or how to approach or help. Like, it is a really tough one. So, like, I don't blame anyone for not getting involved, you know?
But you see, I totally understand your fear, and for you're younger than I am, Mark, and Paul is as well. But you remember, and we're all so conscious. I never forget Declan Flynn
yeah.
was a young gay man, 31 years of age. He was murdered in Fairview Park in Dublin.
Yeah.
Why was he murdered? He was murdered because he was gay, and that language was used as well. The group of young fellas that murdered Declan used that same language that's been used against you 42 years later last night.
Mm-hmm. And that's where it becomes shocking. You just do think that things have moved so further forward. But one of the particular people who was there, and actually he was one of the younger ones, I genuinely believe that he was going to inflict violence on us
mm-hmm.
and
yeah.
had no concerns about doing it. And I think we very closely avoided it. It was coming for us for sure, and we got into the Garda station just in the nick of time.
And remember, the people who killed Declan were five teenagers.
Yeah,
five teenagers.
It's just the lack of any support there to control something like this, or the lack of consequence. I think that was really like evident to us when we left that station, because leaving that station in front of three people who have just mm-hmm. verbally assaulted you for 15, 20 minutes is quite a nerve-wracking walk then even to the restaurant that we ended up being in, because that was another long 5-7 minute walk, do you know?
Yeah. Paul, Mark mentioned very honestly about waking up this morning saying, should I have been holding hands, which even it's an outrageous thing to even generate any, apart from respect, to generate any animosity to people holding hands, you and your husband. Well, Paul, how were you this morning?
Yeah, like very much like Mark, in terms of I don't know, is it because we've been so conditioned in that we always turn around and self-reflect and go, well, actually, how did I cause that? How did I bring about that attention to myself?
Mm-hmm.
Because I just think it's because of what we've seen in the last 40 years, because we just see random hate crimes or hate threats happening. And it's just, there's no complication for anybody apart from, I suppose, us. So we constantly self-reflect.
I'm just, people do know why. I hope people know why, and you know why, Mark and Paul knows as well. I keep going back to Declan Flynn and the five teenagers. Those five teenagers, hopefully, I wouldn't wish it on anyone to die, are still alive. If they're still alive, they're 65, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That shows you the distance, the time. By the way, Declan would have just been in his early 70s as well. He was a young man too, the man they murdered. But we now have, 43 years later, another group of teenagers attacking, verbally, I know, but threatening. They did say we'd thump you. Threatening two gay men in Dublin because they're gay.
Mm.
This is 42 years later.
And I think...
Go ahead, Mark.
In a very respectful marriage.
I've got to say that, brilliant.
I would say that, you know, the weakness or the thing that they found in us was that we were gay. But I have no doubt that if we had not been walking down that street, it could have been anyone else of any other circumstance who could have got that hate. It's just that they have such an armory of weapons to throw at us that it just came so easy to them. And, you know, it is sad to say, but the things they called us, didn't come from nowhere. Yeah. They heard them somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
They've heard those words. You know, they have obviously been conditioned in some way to know that mm-hmm. or not to know that they can't say that or do that or how hurtful that is. Like, you know, that the one particular word, the first slur they called it, is one that cuts me deep. Like, it really is just such a disgusting mm-hmm. slur. Mm-hmm. It really just has the worst connotations around it and like makes me feel awful. And it also, as soon as I hear that word, I know it's so and so yeah. aggressive
it's
that
like
I know
venomous,
that.
Yeah.
That is, there's yeah. real hatred there. And I really do, like, they were jumping off their scooters and trying to hit us. Like, they were going. Okay. They were trying to actually get us.
And her daughter works in Temple Street Hospital in the centre of Dublin. And you're listening to Paul and Mark. Go ahead, Anne.
Yeah, I'm just so sorry for the guys.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just horrendous. I do feel it's nothing to do with them being gay, and I think the gentleman is saying it there, that I think anybody on that street is fair game, or anyone out and about. And mm-hmm. it tends to be relatively early evening.
Yeah.
You know, when my daughter is going home from Temple Street, she parks her car down because she has to use a car because it's just not safe to be around after 8:30 or even after 6 o'clock around there. But I mean, most of the time, I mean, gosh, so many times she's had scrambler bikes circling mm-hmm. her car, guys on scooters hanging onto the wing mirror, sliding across the bonnet of her car. It's terrifying.
And they're on these e-scooters and bikes.
On e-scooters, but it's just, there seems to be, oh, I don't know, but they're just teenagers, you know, they're just hanging out down laneways and around the place. But what terrified her was that it was daylight, and these guys thought it was okay, like hanging on to her wing mirror from Summerhill out towards Fairview.
Mm-hmm.
She varies her route sometimes. But this has happened a fair few times. And she has no choice. It's work, you know.
And is there any, does she talk about it, other people being intimidated? Temple Street is a very, very busy hospital. Great number of staff.
Oh, yeah. I think I would... Now, I know I'm possibly making a generalisation, but there have been a few times that they walk in groups or that one would get a car to another person's car, whoever's parked nearest. Once my daughter just got the taxi home and left her car in the city because when she looked out and looked down, she could just see this group and their scooters. And I think scrambler bikes were made illegal or they can seize them recently. Mm-hmm. I could be wrong, but it's right, it's terrifying because you don't know what they want or why they're doing.
Yeah, well, there is legislation now about e-scooters.
I thought there was. Yeah,
there is. Yeah, there is. I don't know how.
But these
easy
are emerged.
I
don't know whether, and this would be. It's just when the gentleman was speaking there about his awful, awful experience.
Okay.
The time kind of caught my ear as well.
Yeah.
You know,
broad
so
daylight.
If she's doing a shift, that's. You know, mornings.
It's 24/7.
Okay.
Yeah.
After about 8:30, 9, or if you're coming out at 11 p.m.
Yeah. Can you imagine? It's
frightening.
Yeah. And thanks indeed, Paul Kinsler and Mark Rogers. Thank you both, and I hope the Gardaí. You're happy that the Gardaí are taking it very seriously, but I also hope that the two of you get over it as soon as possible. But thank you for alerting people to something that's still happening, unfortunately, on our streets in Dublin and indeed in Ireland. When we heard Brendan Courtney a few weeks ago, a similar type of attack in 2025. Okay, thanks indeed, Mark. Thanks, Paul. Thanks
so much.
Thanks, Joe.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Things are unbelievable at this stage. Unbelievable. Mary Merriman. Mary, good afternoon.
Yes. Hello.
How are you? You're in Kinnaman in Dublin. This happened in Dublin City Centre, Werber Street, one of the most historic streets in Dublin, opposite St. Patrick's Cathedral, on the way down to the stride entrance, so to speak, to Dublin Castle. What happened, Mary?
Well, I was in town on the 11th of June. I was at an event for James Joyce in the James Joyce Centre.
Okay.
And I had to take a walk and through town and get the bus in Werburgh Street.
Yeah.
I was just passing by Werburgh Street Church and I noticed a big group of people were coming towards me. I noticed three guys and, you know, people. And anyway, I didn't pay much attention, but I moved to the edge of the path to let them by, and I kept walking. But as I passed three men, I'd say they were in their 20s. One of them grabbed me by the neck, and I had a gold chain on, which I've been wearing for about 30 years.
Okay.
It's nothing significant. It's a strong chain, but it's not a big chain. He grabbed me by the neck and put his arm around the chain. I thought he was going to choke me. And he just kept yanking the chain and pulling me with it. So he pulled me through to the ground.
Okay, Mary, I just need a better line, because this is...
Okay.
This, hold on there, we try and get a better line. But we're talking to Merryman, who's from Kilnamana. And we were talking to Ellie on Monday. We were talking to Brendan Hennessy on Tuesday about his mother, 83 years of age, has worked in Dublin for 6 decades up and around Merrion Square, got off the Dart in Westland Row, walking up Westland Row around to the left onto Clare Street, one of the busiest junctions. And in the meantime, a young woman had dropped something. They came out of a shop in a hurry and they dropped something. And Nadine Hennessy, in her goodness, picked it up and paced up and just said to me, excuse me, just about to tell them she dropped him. And the woman turned around and punched Nadine directly in the face, just above the eye, and knocked her onto the street. So Mary, Nadine is slightly older than you, but they grabbed the chain around your neck, these three men.
They grabbed the chain around my neck, and I thought I was being choked, and he kept yanking at it, and I hit the ground. Mm-hmm. But while I was on the ground, he kept pulling, but he didn't get it. So the three of them just casually walked away. And with that, several people ran up to me.
Okay.
And tried to help me all up, because I just kept saying to them, I think I've broken my hip. I really felt dreadful pain in my hip. And anyway, I got up and was a bit shook. But at this stage, I just wanted to go home, and a bus came, and I just got on the bus. So on the way home in the bus, I contacted my daughter, and she rang the Gardaí in Kevin Street. Mm-hmm. Kevin Street.
Okay, bear with us, Mary. It's not your fault. It's a dodgy line. Stay with us, and we'll be back after this break. Joe at rte.ie. 51551
on 0818 715 815.
I'm talking to Mary. Merryman was assaulted on Werber Street in Dublin. People from outside Dublin. It's right beside St. Patrick's Cathedral, just at the back of Dublin Castle. A very busy street. Very busy street for buses, actually, and traffic generally. Three men grabbed tried to grab the chain from Mary's neck and knocked her to the ground. Mary, what way did you fall on the ground?
I fell on my left side.
Okay.
And I fell on my hip. Now, I also had a knee replacement this year, and I got a bang on my knee. But to be honest with you, I was so shook at the time that I wasn't really conscious of the pain, but I really did feel I'd done major damage to my hip. But I just wanted to, at this stage now, I just wanted to get out of there. And a bus came, and I got on the bus and went home.
My God.
And my daughter, on the way home, I contacted her, and she rang the Gardaí in Kevin Street.
Okay, which is nearby, yeah?
Which is nearby, and I have made a statement and signed a statement, but I have a very large bruise on my left hip and my upper thigh, and I've been in dreadful pain. It's 9 days since it happened, and I still have the bruise, and I have dreadful pain every day. I have to take painkillers for it. But the good thing is, they didn't get my chain. They broke the clasp, and so it fell off my neck when I was on the bus.
So you're... But like Nadine on Monday's, Tuesday's call, she got up off, after being punched in the face, she got up off the street, and she was in such shock that she went on into work. She walked on into work.
Yes.
Now, it was the next day and subsequently. Yeah. And when did the bruises start and the pain start?
Well, when I got off the bus... I found it was really difficult to walk home. But anyway, I walked home, slowly. And my daughter luckily lives next door to me. And I went into her house and had a cup of tea, and okay. I was quite shook at that stage. But I took painkillers that night when I'm going to bed. I mm-hmm. went to bed quite soon after I got home because it's the bruising
yeah.
was coming up, and I had a lot of pain at that stage. And gradually the bruising is getting better, but I still have some pain, and when I got up this morning, my leg was very stiff and I took painkillers and I went for a short walk, and I'm gradually getting back
to
normal.
But has it shaken? You're obviously very active. You're at the James Joyce Centre, which is a great James Joyce event, and in the centre of Dublin, and you did a lot of walking, obviously.
Yeah.
Has it shaken your confidence about going into Dublin, Mary, city?
No, not really.
Okay,
I have
well done.
Perspective on it. It's one incident and I've been in the city centre thousands of times and nothing has ever happened to me.
Okay.
But no, I'll just be very wary about wearing jewellery and carrying a bag and where I put my purse. I'll just be very wary in future.
Do you think they were... did they try and grab anything else apart from the chain around
your neck? No, and I had a handbag with me, but no, they didn't, no. It was very opportunistic.
Yeah.
But I'm lucky I don't have osteoporosis. If this was a woman of my age, and many of my friends have osteoporosis, they definitely would have had a fractured hip
or a
fractured pelvis. And alternatively, if I had hit my head off the curb the way I hit my hip, I probably would have had a brain injury.
Yeah, that's the shock of it as well as the injury. That's the shock of it. And as I said, as Nadine was, her son told us, she was knocked into the middle of a street, one of the busiest streets in Dublin for buses. They come up around Western Row and they swing in. And just the worry of that and the prospect of that and the thought of that.
Yeah.
But the other thing, Mary, okay, 73 is a good age. It's not, it's 73, people are getting younger. But still, they would have known that you were significantly older than them.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
It was just, and it happened so quickly, and it was over in a few seconds, really.
Mm-hmm.
But several people witnessed it, and when I was lying on the ground, several people came running to my aid.
Oh, great.
And, and offered help, And,
any idea where the three assailants went?
Oh, they just casually walked. When I got up, I could see them walking past the church, and they just casually walked up towards Christ Church Cathedral and Patrick that way. Yeah. Now, the Gardaí are hopeful they might catch them on CCTV because there's a lot in the area.
And what age do you think they were?
Oh, they were definitely mid-20s, I would say.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it's near, one of the busiest shops, near Burdock's, the chip shop there.
Yes, exactly. There were a lot of people outside Burdock's
at the
time.
People did come to your aid. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How are you today, Mary?
I'm okay. I'm okay. Yeah,
you're great. Grand. You're great. You're great. And remember, Nadine said very, very similar to what you said. I love Dublin.
Oh, and the other thing, they broke my glasses as well. I weren't very focused. And my glasses, of course, fell off and they got broken as well. Yeah, it was quite a thud to the ground, my full body weight.
Yeah. Onto a concrete pavement. Mary, thanks indeed, and full recovery, hopefully.
Welcome.
Full recovery now. That's Mary.
Oh, yes.
Mary
Van.
God bless you. Bye bye. Joe at rt.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
I heard the ad on the last break, but one about the new organ donation changes, and it's now an opt out. It used to be an opt in, now you opt out, and it's very straightforward, and want to make sure people know about it. So it helps the overall narrative. You can, if you do not wish your organs to be donated under any circumstances when you pass, you just simply make a phone call and you fill out a couple of boxes and you're now on a register. Otherwise, the medics are now allowed and hopefully encouraged in their sensitive way, which they do. They're now allowed, say, to every family that are in the situation, would you consider organ donation if the scenario is applicable. Now remember, the family can still say no, But as you said earlier, the narrative has changed. Now, Anna was listening to Liveline. Anna, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
You were listening to the organ donation piece, but yeah. You've donated your whole body.
Yes.
When you pass.
That's right.
So tell us about that.
Well, it was my mother mentioned it many years ago that she thought it was a good idea. She worked for a while in the medical end of things, and she said, "Oh, you know, I must do," but she never got around to it.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. And it was always on my mind. And I was, for many years, I've been a blood donor.
Great, yeah.
And an organ donor, or had the organ donor card. And I always try and say it to people that I meet, not, you know, being too
straight up,
but try and just get the point across. It's not that people don't want to, they just actually don't think, I feel. So in 1998, I decided then I would donate my body to the College of Surgeons.
Oh.
And I have four sons, and they were all on board with it. No problem at all. The only problem we had was where would the ashes go after the 1 to 3 years? Yeah, so you can have it, your body cremated and put into the glass in heaven if you want, or else you can give the body back to the family. So I think they wanted me to give the urn back to the family, and one of my sons had to sign the forms, but now he lives in Abu Dhabi, so it's my youngest son now. He'll be the one, the executor.
Okay. And what? Yeah. So you decide you want to donate your body. Where do you go? Who do you contact?
I just rang the College of Surgeons, because that was what my mother had mentioned before. I didn't realise that Trinity, or there are many other places. She had mentioned the College of Surgeons, so I rang them, and they were so good, and they sent out the forms, and from now and again, they send me something just as a reminder: is everything still okay, or you know, do you want to withdraw, etc. So,
can you put, not that you were listening to you, you're so generous in that sense and humane, but can you put any stipulations on the donation of your body?
No.
Can you say I only wanted used for study in Ireland, or research in Ireland, or education in Ireland?
Not that I'm aware of, Joe.
Okay.
Not that I'm aware of.
And that wouldn't. Why should it, said you? I'm just trying to think. Are there any specificities that people could put in? The Royal College of Surgeons, now, there's one. The body must be received within 48 hours of your passing.
That's correct.
Yeah.
So if you die in normal office hours, 9 to 5, you go straight there to the College of Surgeons. But if it's after 5, you go to Corrigan's, the funeral undertakers.
Okay.
I think they're in Camden Street.
Yeah, around the back there, yeah, from the RCSI. Yeah. And then obviously they have to see a death cert. Death notification form by medics. And they say 100 people every year. Donate when they pass, they've stipulated that their bodies can be donated. It takes 1 to 3 years from the time of donation to the release of the body back to the family.
Yes.
This is to allow for the remains to be studied for teaching and research. Now, you mentioned about your youngest son. Do you think about this scenario? And probably, anyone listening knows it's not unusual, probably a stupid question from me. Did you ever think, well, hang on, maybe my granddaughter or grandson might go and study medicine after I pass in the RCSI?
No, I didn't. I didn't think of that at all.
No, it's not. That's not a...
Yeah.
This is my...
And they don't want to see their grandma.
Don't want to see their granny.
Yeah.
But I presume there is anonymity. I presume in terms of the face being covered or whatever, that they wouldn't know who the person is. Of course, they would stipulate that.
Yeah, and I don't think it would be recognisable after a while anyhow, because they'd have to strip the body of the skin, I'm sure, and all that.
Well, you've thought about all that.
Yeah, I thought about it all. Yeah, I just feel that, why doesn't everybody, you know, give a little help? Because you don't know when it's going to be your son or daughter that needs a transplant. Only when that happens that people realise how important it is. And I mean, let's face it, your organs are no good to you if you're dead. So what does it matter?
Yeah.
If it's going to help somebody else, sure, that's wonderful. To give somebody a lung or a kidney, to give them life, I think it's absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
I just think it's not that people are ignorant, it's just they don't think.
Yeah. Stay there, Anna. Trish, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe. Nice to talk to you.
Likewise. Tell us your situation.
Well, I've donated my body. Well, what happened was my Auntie Louie donated her body to medical science. Okay. And she had no family, so I was the person that sort of like was contacted and looked after the whole thing. So, what I really liked was, I went to a gratitude ceremony in the Unitarian Church in Stephen's Green, which was run by the College of Surgeons, There was, so everybody who had a relative who had donated their body was invited to this gratitude ceremony. And this was basically run by the students, So it was absolutely, the talent that some of those young people had was amazing. So we had beautiful music and singing and whatever. But during this ceremony, one of the students, a young woman, got up and gave us a thank you. It was a thank you to us, And she said that, you know, it's one thing to learn how the body works from a textbook. But really, if you really want to know how the body works, you really need to be able to finger it and see it and see how the, you know, the blood vessels and whatever works, And so her speech was thanking us because we, as a body, we are teaching students, And I thought, what a wonderful way when I'm dead and that I'm still actually, you know, educating people. I thought that was a brilliant idea.
And Trish, where? Then when did you get the remains of your Aunt Louie back?
This is a long time ago.
Okay, so it would have been a few years.
Or 20 years ago.
And where did you do anything specific with the remains?
Yes, well, she was cremated.
Okay.
And so we had a little ceremony in Glasnevin, in the church in Glasnevin.
Yeah, and, lovely church.
And we invited family and friends to that. And then she went off to the little patch where they have cremated, you know, where they have the
little
boxes.
It's lovely,
So it was... In a sense, it was almost the same as somebody dying and sort of like being, you know, having a wake and then being buried or having a ceremony.
And Anna was saying she encourages people to talk about the donation scenario. Would your friend, because you discovered this and decided this through a relative telling you about it and you going to the gratitude ceremony. Would you tell people, Trish, that you've donated your body?
Oh, absolutely. I would really encourage it, Joe, because how are the students to learn if they don't have an actual body to work on? So I think it's like almost an essential part of their training or their learning, you know? I just thought it was a brilliant idea when I was invited to it.
Those walls
were... And the student, The other thing actually as well that struck me actually, Joe, is that when I'm on the slab, say, for example, in the laboratory, and there are between 6 and 8 students, they stay with me for the full 3 years that they're doing their learning on the body.
I didn't know that.
Yes.
Isn't that fantastic?
Isn't that fantastic?
And dignified and respectful,
Yes.
I didn't know that. Yeah, that's excellent.
So I'm not being shoved up on a shelf and then brought down to a shelf somebody else or whatever.
And do you ever laugh? Do you ever get into a conversation where the two of you end up laughing about this? I know it's macabre.
It's a sort of a joyful thing.
No one says to you, by the way, Trish, when you're out, the Royal College of Surgeons rang, they said, any sign of you coming up to them? as a prank. No, stay there, Trish. Tommy's in the west. Okay. Tommy's the rest of Ireland, the west of Ireland. Tommy, you're open to the idea. Why?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you can donate your organs, but I know a good few years ago I'd heard about this idea that you could donate your body. And then a few years ago, about 2 or 3 years ago, I started to look into it. And okay. So I live in Galway. So I contacted University of Galway because I thought, obviously, that's okay. the best
the medical school,
to,
you
know,
yeah,
for,
yeah.
for the medical students there. And there were a few emails sent back and forth. And at one stage, then somebody from the college did ring me and we had a conversation about it. And I didn't make any decision at the time.
Okay.
Now, they didn't put any pressure on me one way or the other. They, you know, we talked a little bit about it and, you know, they were asking me why I would like to do it. And I suppose the way I look on it is that, you know, once I'm gone, I'm gone. I know you can donate your organs, but I don't know what it is about it, but the whole thing about donating my...
Well, how do you feel about it now?
Well, you see, this was about two and a half years ago or so. And at the time, they said to me then that if I was to go ahead, that there was a form and they gave me a link that I could download the form and then send the form in and that would be the next step. And at the time, I didn't make any decision about it. I kind of let it drift, I suppose. But I was thinking about it again recently because they did say to me at the time that if you are donating your body, that you cannot actually donate your organs, you know, that they need the full body. So I was thinking about it then recently with this new register that, you know.
I'm sure you're open to that, aren't you, Tommy? Obviously.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But I would still be open to it because I don't know what it is about it. I just like the idea that, you know, if my body, which is of no use to me once I'm gone, but if it can be of use to medical students, that then, well, why not? You know, like I'm 60 years old, so I hope to be around for a good while longer. But, you know, so if my body, after I go, can be of use to somebody, why not?
And you don't want to see a sign, Tommy, as you're driving by the university in Galway, you see a picture of yourself outside the medical school saying, Tommy, coming soon.
You're not,
of course you aren't. And it's so respectful the way it's done. Alva, good. What age were you when your grandmother died?
Well, I was just 6, Joe.
Okay, and when did you discover?
Well, I mean, I don't remember, as your researcher was asking, I don't remember my grandmother having any conversations.
Okay.
But I grew up knowing that my grandmother had donated her body to medical research, was what.
Brilliant, yeah.
And, you know, it was a positive. I guess that's why I texted Liveline. It's probably always been the case, you know, that medical students were accepting donations like that. And
That act, that generous act by your grandmother on her passing, has it influenced others in the family?
Not that I'm aware of subsequently, no. My mum didn't, but I'd be open to it.
Okay. Take your time, Alva. Spend many more years.
Thank you.
You'd be open to it many. Yeah, okay. You will be, and
thank you, Joe.
And the great thing to me has been such a positive reaction to this new legislation about the organ donation. Such a positive reaction to it. And then to hear people... Yeah, it's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. And then to hear people say... And by the way, the Royal College of Surgeons say they need more, so to speak, in a dignified way in their statement. They are always open to people availing of this option if they so wish. So you would be interested, Alva?
Well, I've said it to my daughters, but I haven't done anything actively about it.
Yeah.
You know, so perhaps I should. I'm 63 now in a few days' time.
That's young. Stop.
Time to be doing it.
You're young. Okay, Alva, thanks indeed. Thanks, Tommy. Thanks, Anna. Thanks, Trish. joe@rte.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Now, the good weather and the good weather forecast brings joy, but can also bring heartache, especially if people get in difficulty in the water. And we already have a number of calls. We'll get to them about Lifebuoy has been tampered with, which are so, the messages in the name there, Lifesavers. Francis Doherty. Francis, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
Francis, good, thanks. You actually saved a woman from drowning using a ring buoy.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. It's about 3 years ago, up in Donegal, beside Donegal Airport, Carrickfinn Beach.
And tell us what happened. Beautiful location, beautiful. What accepting tragedy like this threatens?
No, it's just me and my wife, Francesca, was out for a walk on the beach one Sunday afternoon, and we're just walking back up the beach, and we've seen a lot of commotion. There was people running for the life rings and making down towards the water's edge. So we ran up to see what was happening and realised that there was a woman in difficulty.
Wow.
So nobody was willing to run because she was quite a long way off the shore. She was probably over four or 500 metres off the shore, so it was quite a distance out. So I had been used to swimming, so I says, look, here, I'll go out and take the ring buoy with me and I'll go out and try and get her back. And luckily managed to get out to her eventually and got her on the shore. A lot of difficulty, but we got there eventually. So,
you swam out with the life buoy?
Yeah.
You're obviously a very good swimmer.
Well, I wouldn't be brilliant, but I'd be middling. I'd be okay.
And how long did it take for you to get out to her? Obviously, she's thankfully still alive and still struggling and not panicking. But of course, she's panicking, but not panicking. That would lead to tragedy. How long did it take you to swim out to her, Francis?
Well, the thing is, I didn't know if I was going out just to retrieve a body or retrieve somebody still living because she was so far out. It took me about 25, 30 minutes.
Good God.
Because I was swimming against, the tide was filling.
Yeah.
But then she was obviously caught in a riptide, so she was drifting away from me the whole time, but I was trying to swim against the tide, and it was a bit of a breeze in it, so it was a wee bit choppy as well. So it was a bit of a struggle to get out to her, but eventually I got out, and I realised then that she was still okay. I could see that she was lying on her back.
Okay.
So I realised that she was okay. So I just told her to relax and calm down. Now I'll get over to her. But the actual life buoy had paid away out the rope. So it was probably about 70 or 80 metres behind me when I arrived. So I had to start trying to gather the life buoy back in. But I got over to her then and she was in a bad way. She was kind of semi coming in and out of consciousness. And I managed to get her arm pulled in through the life ring and...
Well done.
We're trying to go ashore then. It was a struggle because obviously we were kind of caught on the riptide at that stage. So I didn't know what to do. But luckily, there was a couple of big waves came. And
great.
If we didn't have the life ring, there's not a hope in hell we would have got on them. Because we had the life ring, we managed to get a surf from the life ring to get on a couple of waves. So it helped get us ashore because it was a bit of a struggle to get back in again. But eventually we got in and we got her up onto the beach. There was a few people there that was... there from the start helped us pick Anne and Shore and Anne Gallers, the woman that was in difficulty. So
well done.
We got my wife had rang the emergency services and another girl had rang them as well. So by good luck, the Coast Guard had just arrived maybe 5-10 minutes after we got her back to the beach and the paramedics. So she was worked on then by the paramedics. She was kind of semi-conscious, but she was not in a great way. So she was taken to Letterkenny Hospital and then they flew her on to Galway. She was there for 4 or 5 days. She had a lot of fluid in her lungs and she had strain on her heart, I think, from the whole incident. So basically, only for the life buoys, I think it would have been a different outcome.
And Francis, how long did this operation last? It's 30 minutes to swim out, you pulling the life buoy behind you, and then to get back in?
Yeah, well, we came in quicker because we managed
grab
to surf it on the waves.
Yeah.
But we probably came in about 10 minutes, 15 minutes. So it was probably, I'd say all in 40, 45 minutes. So it was a bit of a... It probably didn't seem long for me because you were kind of under pressure to get out and you didn't realise. But I'd say it was probably a good while all in. But by good luck then, all emergency services arrived. So they were very quick on the scene as well. So that was a good outcome.
Have you met
Anne?
And
Sister Maureen, that actually, the two of them actually would be two good swimmers, and they were swimming all year round, and they basically got into difficulty with this riptide, and by luck, Maureen had the managed to get ashore and raise the alarm. So only for that, probably maybe the two of them could have been lost. Like nobody would have seen for ages because nobody would have noticed. But she was brave enough to get back ashore and have the sense to raise the alarm. So yeah, it all worked out pretty good. But it could have been a different outcome.
Sure. And Francis, have you met Anne since?
Oh yeah. Okay. I've met Anne loads of times.
Brilliant.
Turns out Anne's husband is my next door neighbour.
Brilliant.
From where I was brought up with my parents. So Yeah, there's a good relationship there since that. So we're very close. I was actually at our daughter's wedding there 2 weeks ago.
Magic. So, and her mother was there. Brilliant. Yeah. Because of you. Francis. No. I know. Yeah, I hear your modesty. Francis, by the way, did you ever get a bravery award?
Yeah, there was actually two awards. There was a SECO Just in Time Award.
Okay.
But obviously because of COVID. Normally I go to Dublin Castle and all that, but because of COVID it didn't go ahead, so it was just an online thing, so I didn't get to attend that. And then the following year then there was a Water Safety Ireland National Bravery Award, so I got nominated for a silver medal for that. But lo and behold, I was away fishing. I'm a fisherman, so I couldn't get back in time. So my wife Francesca and the kids had attended Eva and James, so they were up in Phoenix Park at that. They had a great day. It was lovely. I was quite disappointed, I must say.
Where do you fish out of?
I fished out of Killybegs for guts of 20 years, but I went up to Scotland then about 3.5 years ago.
Why?
So I'm based out of... just because of the quotas and the Brexit, the fishing in Ireland got badly affected with that, so it's just kind of getting...
Wow. So you're away from home a bit.
Yeah, away from home quite a lot. I was just, when that accident or incident happened, I was just home about a week at that stage. So, I'd be away a lot during the winter.
Fair play to you, Francis. Stay there, Michael Walsh. This is amazing. Michael, you also saved a woman's life using the Life Buoy, the Ring Buoy. Again, the request is from people and Water Safety Ireland is please do not interfere with a Life Buoy. And if you do see any Egypts interfering with a Life Buoy, check them and try and make sure it's left in a good situation, and indeed report it to get it replaced if need be. Michael, what happened in your situation?
Hello, Joe. How are you?
Good, thanks.
My story was a weird one. It was myself and my mother in lockdown. We're walking the dogs down a slipway where we usually swim them. And we got down towards the water and we were looking in and it was very rough. Like, you know, probably shouldn't put the dogs in this.
Right.
We turned to walk away and go home, like, just look. And we saw a pile of clothes at the top of the slipway.
Okay.
A bit weird to see clothes and shoes and a phone and car keys at the top of the slipway. So obviously you thought the worst straight away. But then, we're like, we better have a look in the water. Maybe there's someone swimming. Maybe they could be in a bit of trouble. Maybe we need to give someone a hand.
Mm-hmm.
So we looked down the water and we could see no one, which is weird. So we kind of went up onto the rocks to have a better vantage and look around properly. And there's actually a blowhole beside the slipway. So like a cave with a hole.
Yeah, it
goes back quite deep and the water kind of comes in. The wave crashing into it. Mam shouts in as a joke, oh, is anybody in there? And then a poor lady screamed back out, help. And we were like, oh, we better do something. This is action stations here. So obviously where we were, there's no reception. So Mam's first thing was she ran up the road to try and get a reception to ring the Coast Guard and ring the lifeboat. She'd be quite savvy that way. She'd know all the numbers off the top of her head and stuff. And there was actually a life ring within 5 metres of the blowhole. So I grabbed that.
Well done.
And climbed up the rocks and into the top of the blowhole and in a small bit and tried to, because it was pitch black inside her, tried to see the lady.
Mm-hmm.
And luckily, I managed to throw the ring into her and she managed to catch it because she was right at the back of the cave.
Yeah.
So the water kind of brought in and she held on to it. And Mam was away and I was holding on to her and trying to reassure her that it's okay.
Yeah,
you're going to be fine. Yeah. You have a flotation device now. You're not going to sink. You're not going to get consumed by the cave. And just held on to it then till, like, we have a very good lifeguard. Our lifeboat station near us, Cormac Sherry.
It's great lifeboat.
Like, that cave would have been particularly tricky rescue for anyone but the lads we know locally are so well trained, and they know it so well, that they were there and they were managed to help her out. There was a diver was into the water within 20 minutes. The helicopter was there within 15 minutes. The lifeboat was there within 20 minutes. Like, everyone was on the ball and spot on.
And where was this? Obviously near Cork, Matt, but where was, what beach was it?
So it's called Dunwarly Beach, Prawns. It has two names.
Sure, I know well. The last time I swam there, Micheál Martin swam past me about seven times. That's his favourite swimming spot, the Taoiseach. And he's a fine swimmer, I can tell you as well. And that's brilliant. And the great thing was, the life buoy was there. You managed to... And when the young woman, when she grabbed the life buoy, was it long enough for you to hold the rope at the other end, or she just was using the life buoy to stay afloat?
So she was a fully qualified lifeguard. Like, she was really water savvy. Like, she knew safety. She was actually going for a swim and realised it was too rough. And as she was walking back up to put on her clothes, a wave actually caught her in the back and pulled her in. So luckily I managed, I think there's maybe 50 feet of rope on the life buoy, and the cave is about 30 feet back. So there was enough for me to throw her life buoy, and for me to see it was quite rough, so I could wrap it around my waist. Yeah. The rope then, just so that I could hold on to her properly. But yeah, there was enough, like, the life buoys are pretty good. Like, not going to be drifting pretty much further than 50 feet out.
Great, great. Well done. Well done. Did you get a bravery award, Michael?
I got the SECO award the man was on about, which is nice.
Just
a nice
time, yeah. And Francis, did you even, I know you're away fishing, and then COVID came when you were due to get the award, the bravery award. But Francis, did you even get your photograph into the Donegal Democrat?
I think the wife, Francesca, and a photograph, all right. No, okay. It was a photograph, all right, yeah.
Because there's no higher accolade, as you know, to get your
photograph. No, it was nice. It was lovely to get it, but it was disappointing to miss it. Yeah, it was very disappointing because the family had a great day.
I thought it was, it's an odd tradition. The fishermen don't know how to swim.
There's a lot of them, all right, Joe. Yeah, there's a fair few of them that can't swim, but... Luckily, I could.
Luckily for Anne. Okay. Thanks indeed, Francis. And safe fishing, Francis. Where do you head from Scotland? Which direction?
It's just mostly out around Shetlands and off the west coast of Ireland.
Yeah, it can be rough.
Yeah, Norway and stuff.
Could be rough.
It's not the most pleasant. Yeah, sometimes it's rough. All right. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, safe traveling, Francis. Safe seafaring and sailing. Michael Walsh, have you been back to Dunwarly since?
I'd swim regularly, especially a lot of us go down after training and stuff, leaving after matches. But it's so nice, idyllic down there.
It's God's little pocket down there, Cork Mac and around by Dunwarly. It's Butler Town, it's fantastic. Michael, well done, and again, safe travelling to you, and safe swimming as well. Joe at rt.ie, 51551 is our text number. Angela Rogers, good afternoon, Angela.
Good afternoon, Joe.
You were listening to your son, Mark.
I was listening to my wonderful son and wonderful son-in-law, and I am so proud of them. So articulate. Yeah. But it's just so unfair, Joe. The marriage equality, we were so
10 years
excited
ago.
With
it.
But we wonder, have things moved on? Have things moved on at all? But anyway, look, I just want to thank you, first of all, for having them on, for allowing them air. I want to tell both of them how proud of them I am. Yeah. And I want to, as I said, thank you for giving the day they got married. It was one of the proudest moments of my life. It was the most emotional wedding of my three children.
Okay.
Because I remember sitting there thinking, 6 years ago, this couldn't have happened. And we were all so proud of both of them. And this is devastating, but this kind of show will highlight that this is still going on. And as a society, we need to educate people and we need to move on. But I'm so proud of them, Joe.
And you're rightly so. And I I remembered, and so did Mark and Paul, and a lot of people remember Declan Flynn, but that was 42 years ago when Declan was savagely killed in Fairview Park by, there was the teenager and the others were 16, 17, 18, 19. But again, it was the same language was being used as they set out deliberately to engage in a homophobic attack and kill a man.
I know.
And this is 42 years later. Yeah, of course we do.
I remember it. I'm not too far behind you in years.
Yeah.
So, and I remember it. And I remember being horrified then. And 42 years later. And luckily, he's a very calm man, Paul. They're very calm people. And I think their whole attitude prevented things becoming much worse than they could have been.
Yeah. Absolutely. So. Absolutely. And Angela, I'm remembering now, Maura Geoghegan-Quinn, who was the Minister for Justice at the time when, but believe it or not, and people will find this hard to believe, well, maybe they won't, Angela, that in our lifetime, the Homosexual Act, as it was called, was a criminal act, believe it or not. And then Maura Geoghegan-Quinn, I remember Maura Geoghegan-Quinn saying, I was visited by a delegation of the mothers of young men who were gay. That convinced me, not that I suspect Maura didn't need much convincing, but that convinced her that the law was ludicrous. So mothers played a great part in the campaign as well. A great part.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, Joe, love is love.
Yeah, yeah.
Whether it's between men and women or men and men and women and women.
Yeah.
Love
yeah.
is love. Yeah. Now, the beauty of it is I have three grandchildren who are growing up with two wonderful uncles. And to them, two men being married is nothing. It's normal.
Yeah.
Absolutely normal.
Joyful. And
joyful. And hopefully, in years to come, it's the next generation we will depend on.
Yeah. Well, again, unfortunately, what Mark and Paul went through last night, but unfortunately, it's a reminder to... to so many of we all have a role here in checking this. These are young men, teenagers, using language in Ireland at this day and age that is totally and completely unacceptable and only has one meaning, and they know the meaning of it, and that's to abuse and intimidate. It's a hate phrase. Angela, thanks indeed. And
thank you, Joe.
Yeah, and the team who spoke to Mark and Paul earlier. Angela, good to meet you, Mark. That's Angela Rogers. Joe at RTE.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
John O'Brien is in East Wall in Dublin. John, you have donated your body, obviously for future times, but you're both your parents.
Yeah.
And you know what influenced them?
No, I don't really know what influenced them at all. I knew my father was mad into it. My mother wasn't that mad into it. But eventually, she got 40 years ago, my father died. He donated his body. And my mother donated the body 30 years ago, she died. And I think what they done, they told us that my father died from cirrhosis of the liver.
Okay.
But he never drank in his life.
Okay.
So they found out that he had homochromatosis. Too much iron in your blood.
Yes.
But 40 years ago, you know, now they can check it with your blood when they're taking your blood. I know loads of people that have it, and they just take blood every now and then and all.
But they need to discover. So when they discovered your dad had homochromatosis, I presume you were tested.
Yeah, we're not. I have 10 sisters and I have 2 brothers. We were all tested.
Okay.
And I found out that I was about 42, Joe, and they said to me, you could be a carrier of it, but I've no children and I wasn't going to have children. So I was okay.
Okay.
But we would have never known. We would have never known.
Yeah,
now, I think some of my siblings, so I think 3 or 4 of my sisters have donated their body, and I have donated my body.
Okay. Well done.
We would have never got that result.
Fascinating angle. Fascinating angle. Okay, John, long life.
Before I go, Joe.
Yeah.
Joe, before I go, do you know where I'm sitting at the moment? And you'll know it well.
What?
I'm sitting in the car park of Sean O'Casey's Community Centre.
Great spot in East Wall in Dublin.
Yeah, I work there.
I drive
the bus and deliver it.
Well done, John.
And I talked to a friend of yours. I was sitting with a friend of yours, James Rickard, this morning.
Ah, great James Rickard, yeah. Well done, John. Well done, Sean O'Casey. Said they're going to meet Margaret. Okay, recognize this music. You will. You will by the time the weekend is over. If you don't already know this song, it's coming.
I'm just a man. To me, you're all I am. Where the hell am I supposed to go? I poison myself again. Something in the orange tells me you're never coming home. If you leave today, I'll just stare at the way the orange touches all things around. Grass, trees, and dew. How I.
Are you there, Annette?
Hello, Joe. How are you?
Do you recognize that song? What's it called?
Yes, I do. Something in the Orange.
Something, as we call it in Phoenix Park this evening. There's something in the My Waddy. There's something in the Orange. Where are you now?
We're just at Phoenix Park now. We're walking up in the sunshine, and it's absolutely glorious.
And is the weather so still beautiful out there as it was this morning? Now, it is great. It's going to be a great day. When did you discover Zach Bryan?
Oh, probably about 4 years ago, maybe.
Yeah.
It was a song that randomly came up called Condemned, and I liked the way he was playing, and I liked the acoustic sound. And then I kind of really got into him about 22 when he got the Grammy with Casey Musgraves. I would have been a big fan of hers for years.
And he's only 29 now. And Brian Lally, who is our music expert, presents a great country program himself at the weekend. But Brian was telling me that one of the great things, one of the very unusual things about Zach is that he crosses genres. It could be Bruce Springsteen, it could be Gareth Brooks. It could be Ed Sheeran. He's managed to... and when did you buy the ticket?
I actually didn't buy the ticket. My sister bought me the ticket for my birthday, which was a great surprise. I only found out last week.
Yeah, okay. And there'll be a big crowd there tonight, tomorrow night. And where are you travelling from?
We're travelling from between Buncodian and Ascarty in County Wexford.
Ah, okay.
So we've made a day of it and had dinner in the Potchine still, and we're so excited.
Oh, it'll be brilliant. And the weather's going to be magnificent, which will get you halfway there. Let's listen to, what's it called again? There's something in the orange. Something in the My Waddy.
Something in the My Waddy.
All I am, where the hell am I supposed to go? I poison myself again. Something in the orange tells me you're never coming home. If you leave today, I'll just stare at the way the orange touches all things around.
It's a lovely sound, isn't it?
Grass, trees, and dew.
I think
it's growing on me now. It's growing on me now.
Please turn those headlights around. Please turn those headlights around.
Well, you're there safe and sound on that in the Phoenix Park already. By the way, you're from Wexford. I normally, the Seafield in Ballymoney, always Michal always says if you want to spend the night there, we give you a night there. Or else if you want to do Dublin, we'll get you a night in the Herbert Park Hotel here.
Seafield.
So is the Herbert, but Seafield. So Michal, we'll sort that out with its award-winning spa and beautiful restaurant. Just outside Ballymoney. Okay, Annette, now safe travelling.
Thank you so much. Great talking to you, Joe.
And don't lose the run of yourself. Sure you won't, darling.
We'll use the run of ourselves when all the songs we know come on. We'll be doing the dancing part.
Let yourself go. When he says there's a problem, but what's it? There's a problem in the orange.
There's something in the orange.
Okay. You're all to sing there's something in the...
Vodka.
Yeah. There's something in the My Waddy, Zach. If you're in Ireland. You're in Ireland. Annette Byrne. Annette Doyle. Thanks a million. And thanks to the Seafield Hotel.